number recording from a CD that's called Crispo Water and Worship Leaders. So everyone's a worship leader that's singing on it, which is why it's also, I don't know what you call it, jazzy, isn't it, really? That's it. So. Right, okay, so as we go through, I don't know if you will mute the light off or not, see what you think as we go through. So I've been asked to speak on trust. We've talked about Jeremiah 29:11, where it says, "For I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord, they are plans for good and not for disaster, to give you a future and a hope." And as I began to think about that, my first question was, what does trust mean? What does trust mean? And trust actually is two things. It's a noun, which means firm belief in the reliability, truth, or ability of someone or something. And it's also a verb, to believe in the reliability, truth, or ability of someone or something. And there are a number of Hebrew words relate to it: trusting in, refuge, protection, counting on, help. And the Greek words associated with it are trust, hope, hope for, and things hoped for. In order to trust someone, we have to know them, don't we? And we base our trust, or lack of it, on past experience. Now, I know Roger quite well, and I trust him with many things. I trust him to be on time, basis. I trust him to find my contact lenses when I lose them. But if he says something he's looking for isn't there, do I trust you on that? No. Because it usually is. He's not good at finding things. Experience has taught me that. Experience has taught me what to trust him about. I know him and I trust him for most things. And there was a jealous wife who didn't really trust her husband. And she went away for a few days with her friends. And she called her husband every day on his mobile just to check up on him. So she'd say, "Where are you?" And he'd say, "I'm at home, dear." She'd say, "I don't trust you. Can you run the food processor for me so I know you're home?" And he'd say, "Sure." And he'd go, "There you go." She'd say, "Okay, I'll talk to you later." This went on for a few days. She'd call him and ask him to run the food processor, which he would do. And then one day, instead of calling him, she called her children and asked, "Where's Dad?" They said, "No idea. He leaves early in the morning and comes back late in the night, but he takes the food processor with him wherever he goes." We base our trust, or lack of it, on experience. And so when we're talking about trusting God, we need to know God and use the experience from the past. But then I came up with another question. Is there a difference between trust and faith? So I looked up faith in the dictionary and the definition of faith, which is only a noun. There is no faith verb. But it says complete trust or confidence in someone or something. For example, this restores one's faith in politicians. I'm not quite sure what the "this" is in that. And then the second aspect to trust is strong belief in the doctrines of a religion based on spiritual conviction rather than proof. So outside of the Bible, there is a difference between trust and faith, because faith has a strong religious association, whereas trust is merely about everyday things. And also, faith is not a verb, although Jimmy Carter did once say, "To me, faith is not just a noun, but a verb." So to delve a bit deeper into the meaning of trust, I tried looking it up in Bible dictionaries, and in many of them, this is what I found. Trust seeth not in they didn't come up with difference. And you just find you referred to faith, and that's a puzzle. And I've thought about that a lot this week. I've looked up many complicated reference books, and I don't take you through all that today, but I have a simplified conclusion. That in the Old Testament, faith is rarely used in our English translations. Don't know whether you've realised that, but you rarely find the word faith in the Old Testament. And that's because there is no Hebrew noun for faith. The words in the Old Testament that have been translated faith have been done so because of a connotation with the New Testament. So it's mostly trust, but in the New Testament we find faith used far more often than trust. I found this in one of the study books I looked at. That's what I wanted. A bifurcation of significance. What on earth does that mean? Well, it did go on to explain it in this book. It says faith has two senses, one passive, sort of fidelity, trustworthiness, and the other active, reliance and trust. And in the New Testament, mostly it's used in the active sense, to mean reliance and trust. Why do people use these words? No idea. And the most prominent passage on the New Testament of faith is Hebrews 11, which begins, faith is the confidence that what we hope for will actually happen. The confidence that what we hope for will actually happen. It gives us assurance about things we cannot see. And in Hebrews 11, the faith illustrated by Abraham, Moses, Rahab, and the others was demonstrated by their reliance upon a God that they knew to be trustworthy. So, I concluded that there's very little difference between trust and faith. Although in my mind, trust is more passive. It's a sort of more everyday thing. I don't necessarily do anything, I just relax into it. I rely on God to be there, to be trustworthy, to provide, to protect. And whilst faith incorporates all that, it seems to me that it's more active. And I think of what Jesus said in Matthew 21. He said, I tell you the truth, if you have faith and don't doubt, you can do things like this and much more. He just allowed the fig tree to just fruit because he was cross with it. And he says, you can even say to this mountain, may you be lifted up and thrown into the sea, and it will happen. You can pray for anything, and if you have faith, you will receive it. So that's where I got to in all my thinking. And next time I come, I'm going to think much more about faith. But today, we're focusing on trust, and we're going to head to the Old Testament, and we're going to look at Abraham's life. Am I at the right place now? Yes, good. So when we first come across Abraham, God has asked him to leave everything that he knows. Leave your native country, your relatives, your father's family, and go to a land I will show you. Not leave Alton and go to Merston, but just go somewhere. I'll show you where. And God does promise to make Abraham a great nation. He said, I'll bless you, I'll make you famous, and you'll be a blessing to others. I'll bless those who bless you and curse those who treat you with contempt. And all the families on earth will be blessed through you. And Abraham trusted God. He did what God asked. Genesis tells us that Abraham was 75 when he undertook this journey into the unknown. And he left Haran and all that he knew. He took with him his wife Sarah, his nephew Lot, and all his wealth, his servants, his flock, they all headed for Canaan. And Hebrews 11 describes it like this. It was by faith that Abraham obeyed when God called him to leave home and go to another land that God would give him as his inheritance. He went without knowing where he was going. And even when he reached the land God had promised him, he lived there by faith. For he was like a foreigner living in tents. And when he got to Canaan, God repeated his promise. He said again, I will give this land to your descendants. And Abraham built an altar there, and he built a number of altars as he travelled south. And he eventually got to the Negev, which I think now is a desert. And as when he got there, disaster struck. There was a famine. And because of the famine, Abraham and Sarah and Lot and everyone, they all went to Egypt. And when they got there, Abraham demonstrated a complete lack of trust in God. God had said to him, I'm going to bless you. There's going to be a whole nation coming from you. You're going to bless the world. And yet when he got there, he said, Sarah, you're very beautiful. I think I'm going to say that you're my sister, not my wife. Because if they think that you're my wife, they'll kill me so they can get me. Do we trust God? So often we can discover whether or not we're trusting God by how we act. Abraham lied about Sarah, and Sarah was taken to the palace. And do we take steps to make sure that we're safe, even though we do things which are wrong? Or to make sure that we're not inconvenienced or hurt? Or do we just trust God in every situation? When the next time you find yourself thinking, how can I get out of this? How can I avoid this? Think to yourself, am I trusting God in this? And you'll find out whether you are or not. Anyway, God came to the rescue. He saved Sarah as well. Before Pharaoh had married her, God sent a lot of plagues on Pharaoh. He seems to do that quite a lot to Pharaoh, to send plagues. So Pharaoh summoned Abraham and told him off. He somehow found out that Sarah was his wife and had banished them from Egypt. I just wonder how different that experience would have been for Abraham and all his family if he had trusted God. And if he'd said, she's my wife. I'm sure God would have honored that. Anyway, moving swiftly on. Abraham and Lot had become very wealthy by this time, and their servants were fighting with each other because there wasn't enough grazing for all the flocks that they had. So they decided to separate, and Lot chose the Jordan Valley, which was rich pasture land, and went there, and Abraham had to make do with what was left, the hill country. But again, God repeated his promise. God said to him, look as far as you can in every direction, north and south, east and west. I'm giving you all this land to you and your descendants as a permanent possession. And then he said he would have as many descendants as the dust of the earth. They couldn't be counted. And he told Abraham to go and walk through the land and see what he was going to be given. This is the third time God's made a promise to Abraham. And each time the promise has got sort of bigger and more specific. But in essence, it hasn't changed. Because God can be trusted to keep his promises. Well, while this is going on, Lot is attacked by someone with a very strange name, Chedorlaomer. I think that's how you pronounce it. And he's captured, and his family are captured. And Abraham hears about this and goes to the rescue. And he beats the armies of Chedorlaomer. And along the way, he comes across a very mysterious character, King Melchizedek, who he gives a tenth of all the spoil to. And Melchizedek blesses Abraham. And also, there's a very strange little thing there that it says the king of Sodom offered to give Abraham some of the spoil. And Abraham said, no, I don't want what you're giving me. I want people to know it's God who's made me wealthy. So Abraham is now trusting God again. But he's feeling rather insecure because he has no son. And he tells God, what's going to happen because there's only my servant to inherit everything? And again, God said to him, your servant's not going to be your heir. You will have a son. And he took him and said, look up into the sky, count the stars. You'll have as many descendants as that. And of course, you can't count the stars, can you? You probably can count the few you can see around here. But if you go somewhere where they call it a dark sky, and you see all the stars that there are loads, you can't count them. So Abraham's trusting God at the moment, but then nothing happens for a while. And so both Abraham and Sarah demonstrate that they don't trust God. And Sarah says to Abraham, God's prevented me from having children. Go and sleep with my servant and see if you can have a child with her. Now, that sounds very strange to us, but actually, in the times, it wasn't strange. And the child of the servant could have been the heir for Abraham. And so Abraham agreed with Sarah's proposal and slept with Abraham. And I just think, you know, we're often like this. God says, I'll do this, something that we want, something we dream about, and we can't wait. So we try to help God out. When you actually think about it like that, it's just ridiculous, isn't it? But that's what they were doing. They were trying to help God out. And although it wasn't wrong, what happened next was not good, because once Sarah saw that Hagar was pregnant, she was so horrible to her, although she did have an excuse because Hagar started to lord it over her, but Sarah was so horrible to her that Hagar ran away out into the desert and had to be rescued by God. Eventually Ishmael was born as a result of Sarah and Abraham's lack of trust in God, and that brought a whole load of trouble to the people of God. By now, Abraham was 86. 13 years later, when Abraham was 99, God repeated his promise again. They've waited all this time. Now, some of you are quite young. Some of us are a lot older. Some of you haven't waited very long for anything. But this is a long time to wait, isn't it? And these angels came to visit Abraham, and one of them apparently was the Lord, and renewed the covenant with Abraham. He said, I'll make you the father of a multitude of nations. I'll make you extremely fruitful. Your descendants will become many nations, and kings will be among them. The Hebrews describes this as Abraham was confidently looking forward to a city with eternal foundations, a city designed and built by God. And Sarah heard this conversation from inside the tent, and she laughed in disbelief to herself. So, quietly, she knew she was far too old to have a baby. I don't know how old she was, but Abraham was 99. Sarah was a similar age, presumably. And although she laughed silently, the Lord heard the laugh somehow and asked why she'd laughed. And Sarah was afraid, so she denied it. I didn't laugh. But God said to her, you did laugh. And then he said to Abraham, is anything too hard for the Lord? Is there anything in your life that is too hard for God? And the answer is no. There is nothing too hard for God. Then he went on, I'll return in about a year, and Sarah will have a son. There's not much sign of trust here from Sarah, is there? So you might think that God wouldn't bless her, that God wouldn't give her the son. But he did, as we will find out. In the meantime, Lot's got himself involved in some bad lot of people and needed rescuing again. And God told Abraham he was going to destroy Sodom where Lot was living. And we have this really strange passage where Abraham is confident enough to plead for Sodom with God. He's got enough trust, the relationship is strong enough that he says, don't destroy it, even if there's just 50 righteous people. And God says, okay, and then Abraham says, oh, maybe there's not 50. What about if there's just 40? And he bargains God down to it, if there's just 10. But there weren't even 10 righteous people. And in the end, only Lot and his family were saved. God sent angels to rescue them. And even then, Lot's wife is turned to a pillar of salt as she looks back. Are you looking backwards? Are you looking at what was before? Or are you looking forward? Are you looking to what God is doing now and in the future? We often talk about the God who was and who is and who is to come. But there's a point in Revelation where it makes it different. It says the God who is and who was and who is to come. God is the God of today and the God of tomorrow as well as the God of yesterday. Don't look back. Don't be like Lot's wife. Follow God. Go with God. Well, you'd have thought Abraham would have learned his lesson, would have trusted God. He moved to Sam for a while and entered the country of King Abimelech. And he tells him Sarah was his sister. God's allowed Abraham to intercede for Sodom. He sent angels to rescue Lot. But still, Abraham doesn't trust God enough to keep him safe. And again, God has to intervene. And he gives Abimelech a dream and he's all sorted out and Sarah is kept safe. And God keeps his word and Isaac is born. No, I've gone too far now. I'm not doing this very well, am I? I haven't got there. Oh. Right. I had to look behind the door often. Oh, you have to shout at me if you think I've gone too far. So, in spite of all Abraham's failures, in spite of Sarah's doubts, God can be trusted. And the Hebrew puts it like this. It was by faith that even Sarah was able to have a child. Though she was barren and was too old, she believed that God would keep his promise. So we don't have to be perfect. Whatever your past history with God is, you can trust God to show up for you in the future, to have your back, to be on your side, to be trustworthy. But then, let's try. Right. So Abraham isn't out of the woods yet, and I've tried to work out. I think he must be over 110. So you would have thought he would have been through everything and done everything. But God's asking you now to sacrifice Isaac. This is the child of the promise. The promise that he's waited all this time for. And as they go out to sacrifice, Isaac notices something's missing. Turns to his father and says, "We've the fire and the wood, but where's the sheep for the burnt offering?" But Abraham is now trusting God. God will provide a sheep for the burnt offering. God will provide. So they went on together and built an altar. And Abraham even went as far as putting Isaac on top of the wood. And he picked up a knife to kill his son. And as he picked the knife up, as he was about to plunge the knife into his son, the angel of the Lord called to him and said, "Abraham, don't lay a hand on the boy. Don't hurt him. Now I know that you truly fear God. You've not withheld from me even your son." And then they saw a ram caught in the hedge, and they sacrificed the ram. And Hebrews 11 puts it like this. It was by faith that Abraham offered Isaac as a sacrifice when God was testing him. Abraham, who had received God's promises, was ready to sacrifice his only son, Isaac. Even though God had told him, "Isaac is the son through whom your descendants will be counted." Abraham reasoned that if Isaac died, God was able to bring him back to life again. And in a sense, Abraham did receive his son back from the dead. Maybe there is someone here today who feels that God's calling them to give up a promise that they've been given by God, or to let it go. God's promises last, and sometimes we're called to do things which go against what we naturally feel. But God can be trusted. And despite all Abraham's mistakes, he was able to trust God in the end. And he received a blessing from God that he longed for and made it into the Hebrews 11 Hall of Fame. Now, I don't know where you are in your trust with God. Perhaps you're just beginning to get to know God and to trust him a bit. And if that's where you are, then you need to learn as much as you can about God. You need to read his word, find out what he's like. You need to pray. You need to ask people to help you. You need to try and put his word into practice and follow the promptings of his spirit. Or maybe you feel you're a failure because you haven't trusted God. Maybe you feel you've messed up. Remember, Abraham failed. But in the end, he trusted God and made it into the Hebrews 11 Hall of Fame. Perhaps you're not sure whether you're trusting God or not. Look at how you're living, what you're doing. Your actions will tell you if you're trusting God or not. Are you looking forward with hope, or are you worrying about stuff that might or might not happen? The amount of worry in your life, I think it's sort of a bit like scales, and worry goes down and trust is less heavy. The heavier your trust is, the less the worry will weigh. Worry is a really good indication of whether you're trusting God or not. If you're worrying about something, tell God about it. Ask him to help you with it. This is Niagara Falls. It's a stunning place where the power of water is demonstrated and the beauty of God's creation can be seen. You can ride on a little boat underneath it. They cover you in black plastic so you don't get too wet. But it is an incredible display of God's beauty in creation. In the summer of 1859, someone who has a very strange name, Jean-Francois Rabelais Blondin, known as the Great Blondin, began a series of tightrope walks across the Niagara Gorge. And it says that it drew crowds as large as 25,000 people, which is an awful lot of people in those days. And he crossed in increasingly difficult ways, riding a bicycle and then pushing a wheelbarrow, and even with his hands and legs bound in chains. There's the wheelbarrow. I've been unable to ascertain whether this is actually quite how true this is, but he did go across with a wheelbarrow, and he then asked the crowds, "Do you think that I could push someone across in this wheelbarrow?" And they all said yes. And there are two ends to the story. In one end, someone gets in and he pushes it across. I think that's not true. I think that when he said, "Do you want to get in the wheelbarrow?" they all said, "No." No one volunteered. So my question that I want to end with today is, will you get in God's wheelbarrow? God's wheelbarrow is safe and secure. You can trust God. And whatever it is you're considering or worrying about or thinking about or pondering about, this morning you can trust God. So let's pray and let's give those things to God. Shall we pray? Father, you can see each of our hearts. You know what's in our minds. You know what we're struggling with. You know what we're afraid of. You know what we're worrying about. You know what we're struggling to trust you with. Help us to give you those things. Help us to get in your wheelbarrow and allow you to wheel us. Help us to trust you with all of our lives. Every day, every moment, help us to trust you. Help us to learn more about you, to know that you are good and can be trusted. Thank you that you never let us down. Thank you for your care every day, for your love every day, for the hope that you bring every day. Help us to trust you.